Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang, in for Tiffany Meyer. Our top story. President Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping spoke by phone. No final TikTok deal has been reached, but China's tone is softening. Could this signal a breakthrough for U.S. users? We break it down. Defense front and center for Taiwan's president. He toured the island's largest defense trade show, meeting U.S. weapons maker like Lockheed Martin and Shield AI. TikTok is here to stay, but its algorithm is still keeping experts on alert. A cybersecurity advisor shares his hot take and the three steps he says the U.S. should take. And China's Huawei vowing to roll out the world's most powerful AI computing clusters in 2 years. The country is pushing to rely less on Western semiconductors, but can Beijing really compete with the West on its own microchips?
Multiple state-backed semiconductor programs were undermined by severe corruption.
After a phone call with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping, President Trump says he'll meet Xi one-on-one at the APEC summit in South Korea. China, though, isn't confirming that. While no agreements came out of the talks, Beijing's tone seems to be softening. Here's more.
President Trump spoke by phone with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping Friday morning, an hour earlier than planned at 9 a.m. Eastern. Around 11 a.m., Trump called the conversation very productive on social media. He says the two leaders made progress on trade, fentanyl, ending the war in Ukraine, and the TikTok deal. In his post, Trump mentioned twice that China had approved the TikTok deal. This comes just days after U.S.-China trade talks in Spain, where Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent announced a framework deal for the app. Beijing's official statement did not confirm the deal, but signaled a softer tone. China's foreign ministry said it, quote, respects the wishes of businesses and welcomes good business negotiations. TikTok's parent company ByteDance thanked both leaders and pledged to follow U.S. law to keep the app available. China also praised the recent talks as reflecting equality, respect, and reciprocity, a shift from Beijing's usual accusations of U.S. unilateralism and hegemony. And in a surprising addition, Beijing expressed gratitude to the U.S. for its support during World War II. The move echoes Trump's recent post marking China's military parade earlier this month. It's worth noting the Chinese government that allied with the U.S. during the war was led by the Kuomintang, one of Taiwan's current political parties, not the Chinese Communist Party. While trade agreements between the U.S. and China remain unresolved, the U.S. and Taiwan reached a major deal. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins announced the same day that Taiwan will buy $10 billion worth of American agricultural products, including soybeans, over the next 4 years. This comes as China continues to use agriculture as leverage in its trade fight with Washington. As of last week, China hasn't booked a single cargo of soybeans for the new marketing season. And Reuters reported Trump's intelligence advisors recently met with Taiwan's de facto U.S. ambassador. It was the highest-level U.S.-Taiwan contact since Trump returned to the White House.
A clear gesture of Taiwan's commitment to staying ready, starting at the expo floor. President Lai Ching-te visited Taiwan's largest defense trade show on Friday, the Taipei Aerospace and Defense Technology Exhibition. Local companies briefed him on their drone systems and the largest counter-drone technology. Drones are a key focus on Taiwan's preparedness for a possible Chinese invasion. Lai also met representatives from U.S. defense firms Lockheed Martin and Shield AI. He toured their booths and received briefings on their products. Although details of the TikTok deal are still hidden behind closed doors, people who are worried the app might go dark can feel relieved it won't be banned, at least for now. But those concerned about the app's ongoing controversies don't seem to share the same relief. To dig into these details and issues and the solutions the U.S. government can take to protect American safety and security, we speak with Rex Lee, cybersecurity advisor at My Smart Privacy, for his insights. The deputy head of China's cybersecurity regulator recently disclosed that China is willing to license the algorithm to the U.S. rather than sell off the entire know-how. Li sheds light on why China is unlikely to let go of TikTok's algorithm.
The algorithm that enables TikTok to operate and collect information on the end users, that's the national security threat, and they're not going to divest themselves from that.
The harms caused by leaked data doesn't stop at losing your privacy. Li further explained the dangers people could face when bad actors weaponize their data.
These platforms are developed with highly addictive technologies, such as brain hijacking technology and manipulative advertising technology. People don't realize that they're being addicted. And that's producing all sorts of issues that we see today with tech addiction, self-harm, depression, suicidal thoughts, and actually we see online bullying and online violence, but we're also seeing indoctrination that can happen through these apps. Now, the other issue is that they're AI-infused apps.
From the perspective of a cybersecurity advisor for government agencies who understands China's threats in the cyber world, we ask Li what three measures he would first take to address the threats posed by TikTok.
Well, three measures. One of the things they need to ban is surveillance capitalism. You then have to ban the use of highly addictive technologies that need brain hijacking technology, manipulative advertising technology, and chatbots that can produce the Eliza effect need to be banned. This is literally brainwashing technology. And then there needs to be some oversight on what companies can hire U.S. law firms for lobbying. If China is a national security threat regarding tech, then why are we allowing these Chinese companies?
We will keep you updated on the latest developments in the TikTok deal. The U.S. is stepping up competition with China over rare earth minerals. On Thursday, the U.S. Trade and Development Agency announced a $1.4 million grant to an American mining company. The money will help the company expand operations at a copper and cobalt mine in Zambia. Cobalt is a rare earth element widely used in making electric vehicles. The trade agency says the Zambia project will help diversify American access to critical minerals. They say the mine is expected to start shipping copper and cobalt to the U.S. in 2028. Rare earths are a group of metals critical for making weapons and cars. China controls 70% of the global rare earth supply chain, and the U.S. is playing catch-up. Earlier this year, China restricted rare earth exports to the U.S. in retaliation for Trump's tariffs. As a result, Ford paused production at its Chicago plant for a week. Automakers in Europe and Japan also faced supply disruptions. President Trump has been trying to cut U.S. reliance on Chinese rare earths. He secured a deal giving the U.S. access to minerals in Ukraine. He also strengthened cooperation with Saudi Arabia on critical minerals. And he ordered officials to speed up deep sea mining, harvesting minerals from the ocean floor. China is ramping up its AI competition with the U.S. while pressuring its tech firms to rely less on Western microchips. But the big question is, can China really compete with American AI giants using only chips made at home? NTD's Julia Song has the story.
Chinese tech giant Huawei announced Thursday it plans to roll out the world's most powerful AI computing clusters over the next 2 years. These clusters are networks of interconnected computers that harness the power of thousands of chips. These new products will directly compete with NVIDIA, the dominant U.S. AI microchip maker. Artificial intelligence is central to U.S.-China competition, and AI microchips are the foundation of that battle. Huawei's announcement comes as Beijing races to develop its own microchip technology and cut reliance on Western chips. Chinese authorities recently reportedly banned the country's biggest tech companies from buying NVIDIA's AI chips, according to the Financial Times. The regime is cranking up pressure on companies to accelerate semiconductor development and wean themselves off NVIDIA chips. But can Chinese companies compete with giants like OpenAI using only homegrown microchips? Tang Hao, a China Affairs commentator, says it will be a challenging task.
The Chinese regime has historically relied on stealing foreign technology to develop its high-tech industry. As a result, China's semiconductor sector lacks the long-term research and development foundation and experience that the U.S. and Taiwan have built up. Without that solid groundwork, it is very difficult to develop microchips that can compete with Western rivals in a short period of time.
He noted corruption is also a problem.
Multiple state-backed semiconductor programs were undermined by severe corruption. Funding was drained, yet technological progress was limited. On top of that, Western countries have tightened restrictions on semiconductor-related technology exports to China. As a result, developing advanced chips domestically in the short term is extremely difficult.
Tang said there could also be political reasons behind the push.
Beijing's high-profile push into semiconductor development may be as much about politics as technology. It could be aimed at 2027, the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese regime's military, a possible window for a Taiwan invasion, and a key year for Xi Jinping's potential re-election.
Developing advanced microchips is a national priority for the CCP. Tao notes that most leading Chinese chipmakers are state-owned and controlled by the regime. That means their work is tied directly to Beijing's political and strategic goals.
During his trip to the UK, President Trump sat down for an interview with Fox News in London. Trump said China and India could put financial pressure on Russia by stopping purchases of Russian oil, which would help lead to an end of the war in Ukraine. Here's the president taking questions from Fox hostess Martha McCallum.
Very disappointed when they say sanctions. I don't mind sanctions, but when I do sanctions and people are buying oil from a person they shouldn't be buying oil from,
it makes it much different. You said you go first on China. Yeah. You said we're doing sanctions 50% against India because they're the biggest or second biggest
and
buyer of Russian oil.
And we did that, and that's a big step.
So when you talked to Starmer, did you say, let's get everyone on board? If you guys do sanctions on India and China, then we'll do that too.
Well, if they did sanctions as an example, or tariffs, or whatever you want to call it, if they did that on China, I think the war would maybe end because China is by far the biggest purchaser of oil from Russia.
The head of Britain's Foreign Intelligence Agency says there's no evidence that Russia's President Putin wants to negotiate peace in Ukraine. The comments came in a speech today by Richard Moore, chief of the Secret Intelligence Service, MIE. Here he is.
In recent weeks, Russia has stepped up its attacks on civilian targets still further. And there can be no equivalence between the suffering of the aggressor and the victim, but it's absolutely clear that Putin's lack of concern for human life extends also to his own people.
Moore says Putin seeks to impose his imperial will by all means at his disposal. But the spy chief says Russia simply does not have the ability to fully subjugate Ukraine by force. Moore says even if Russia is grinding forward on the battlefield, it is at a snail's pace and at a horrendous cost. Moore says the Russian leader is mortgaging his own future's country future for his own personal legacy and for what he called a distorted version of history. Moore was speaking at the British consulate in Istanbul after 5 years as head of MI6. He leaves the post at the end of September. Coming up, a Chinese national convicted in New York federal court on fentanyl trafficking charges faces sentencing on Friday. The case highlights China's role in America's deadly drug crisis. We have the details. And Afghanistan's Bagram Air Base, President Trump wants to retake control, aiming to curb China's nuclear reach. Why is the base so important, and is this plan even possible? An expert weighs in. More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang, in for Tiffany Meyer. A landmark case in the fight against fentanyl. On Friday, a Chinese national has been sentenced to 25 years in the U.S. for fentanyl trafficking. He was also convicted of importing precursor chemicals and money laundering. According to court documents, Wang Jingzhou worked for a chemical manufacturer based in the city of Wuhan in southern China. That company shipped more than 440 pounds of fentanyl precursors to the U.S. That's enough to kill 25 million Americans. Wang was arrested in Fiji 2 years ago during an in-person meetup with one of his buyers. But they turned out to be an undercover Drug Enforcement Administration agent. Wang was later extradited to New York for trial. The New York federal court noted that Wang was fully aware that his fentanyl shipments were headed for the United States. At Friday's court sentencing, the judge highlighted that fentanyl trafficking in the U.S. is a highly severe crime. It's the leading cause of death for young Americans. Wang was handed down 25 years in the U.S. for producing and selling fentanyl precursors. On top of that, he was also charged for his involvement in money laundering and faces 3 years of supervised release after the sentencing. Another individual involved in the case, Yiyi Chen, will be sentenced to 15 years. Meanwhile, the DOJ says it is still pursuing another Chinese national allegedly linked to the operation. These prosecutions mark some of the first U.S. indictments against Chinese fentanyl manufacturers. Officials stress that the case is only the tip of the iceberg. Last April, U.S. lawmakers said China under the Chinese Communist Party is, quote, the ultimate geographic source of the fentanyl crisis. Companies in China produce nearly all illicit fentanyl precursors. Earlier on Monday, President Trump sent Congress what he calls the majors list. Trump listed China among 23 countries tied to producing and transporting illicit drugs to the U.S. Five of them were singled out for failing to crack down on these activities. They were Venezuela, Colombia, Afghanistan, Bolivia, and Burma. For the first time, President Trump said on Thursday that his administration is trying to retake Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. The base fell under Taliban control after the 2021 U.S. withdrawal. He also referenced China, calling the airbase, quote, an hour away from where China makes its nuclear weapons. To discuss it, we spoke with Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. Gobb is a Black Hawk helicopter pilot for a former U.S. Army battalion commander who served four combat tours in Afghanistan.
Darren, you operated out of this base for years. The president talked about how close it is to where communist China makes its nukes. How would a base like this be used if things did escalate to that point with China?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Paul. The base has many potential uses, and geography, of course, is its greatest advantage. It's not as simple as taking, being given the airbase theoretically by the Taliban and then just occupying it with Air Force assets. You have to secure it and do a bunch of other things as well. But it is a perfect airbase for doing something like that because it's essentially in the middle of nowhere and has most of what we left there behind when it comes to things like the security measures. It would have to be upgraded, but they could be left in place. But it's more than just China. If you just look at a map of where Bagram is and look at what it's close to, there are many directions you could take from Bagram that would give you significant reach into adversary type of nations, both west and north. But it wouldn't just simply be that, airborne assets of various kinds. You could easily consider this an operating base where you'd find intelligence agencies and potentially other nations' intelligence agencies operating, because Afghanistan's gone back to being a really terrorist haven, frankly. And we need to keep an eye on it and see what else grows there again so we don't have the same problem we had that led to 9/11 before. So lots of things can happen. Rather large air base can land almost anything.
It's an incredible development, Darren, to hear the president talk about it. He said that they want something from the United States. He didn't clarify who they were. What did he mean? And that was in the context of the possibility of America getting this base back. But what do you think the president meant there by they want something from the United States so we can potentially get it back?
Well, I mean, I can't be specific because I don't know the specifics of what he was talking about there regarding what they want, but it seems like most of the world seems to want from the United States some sort of concessions that come with financial benefits or food aid or things like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if something like that's on the table, but there could be something that they've transmitted through other agencies or people to Washington, D.C. about something very specific that we are not privy to yet. The question will be, is that something that we're willing to actually deal with? And is Bagram something that they're willing to give back to us as a result? And, you know, do we really want to plant our people back in the middle of Afghanistan, where the rest of Afghanistan is controlled essentially by the Taliban and other warring gangs? Because it's not like Taliban controls every corner. So there would be a significant assessment to make about whether or not that airbase is actually something we can secure again and hold and make use of in a way that advances America's national security interests.
Well, when the president says they, you're pretty confident he's talking about the Taliban. Those guys will have, don't want to say the final say here, but those are the guys who potentially want something.
It could be them, or it could be those who are, you know, kind of like their controllers. And frankly, that is China. So I'm not really sure that I would count China in on that, because they're not going to want us back in Bagram in the first place. They enjoyed occupying it very quickly after we left. And of course, China's been in Afghanistan since I saw them personally in 2004. So I doubt you're going to see them advocating for it. The only thing truly left there would be the Taliban, but there may be an agency at play that I'm not aware of right now.
So, Darren, the president mentioned China, and like I mentioned in the introduction, how this base is close to where they make their nukes. This is what the president highlighted during that press conference. You're saying that China's influence in Afghanistan, even outside of that, is still sizable. Well, what exactly are they doing there?
When I first saw them in China, they were pursuing mining claims. And that's really, you know, it goes back to rare earth minerals and other means of generating wealth that they're always looking for. And so that's what I would focus on outside of a lot of the other stuff is China's economic interests in dominating what Afghanistan can provide. And when it comes to things like minerals, Afghanistan has all of it.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang in for Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you soon.